Good morning, New Mexico. Welcome to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're broadcasting from the Santa Fe Baking Company, streaming on the web at ksfr.org, podcasting at santafe.radiocafe.org, thanks to Dotfoil Computer Services, and we're at facebook.com/radiocafe. I'd like now to welcome to the program award-winning journalist Mohammed Omer. He received the Martha Gellhorn Prize for his dispatches from Gaza, and his work has appeared in many international media outlets in many languages. Welcome to the Radio Cafe, Mohammed Omer.
Thank you, Mary Charlotte.
So you are in Gaza right now. Tell us what you're seeing among your friends and fellow citizens in terms of daily life.
Well, I would like to start with what's happening at the moment. I'm sitting in the room right now, just quite dark, and there is no electricity. There is a huge crisis in the Gaza Strip due to the shortages of fuel coming through Israel to fix the problem of the electricity. There has been dispute between the Palestinian Authority and the government in the Gaza Strip, headed by Hamas, of who should settle the payment for the fuel which runs the main generators that provides electricity to the Gaza Strip. Gaza Strip is suffering a great deal due to the shortages of electricity. It can be from 12 to 14 hours, even 16 hours a day without electricity. It's never predictable when you will have electricity in the Gaza Strip. The whole situation affecting also water. There is shortages of water in the Gaza Strip. In my house, for example, for the third day, we have no water. I have been to a place where I used to have my hair cut, and I'm talking to the gentleman, and we were discussing about electricity, and one of them said to me, it has become a dream to have a shower. And another man said, well, actually, it became a luxury to have a shower. We barely have the drinking water, and things are quite difficult at the moment in the Gaza Strip due to the shortages of electricity all over the Gaza Strip. When you don't have electricity, you can't have water in your house because you have to have the generators of water which pumps water into your house. Otherwise, you are not able to get drinking water. And this has been the problem in areas in Rafah, in the south, in the middle of the Gaza Strip, and even in the north. It's quite hot at the moment in the Gaza Strip, and it is the Muslim fasting Ramadan month. And as you can imagine, people are in desperate need for electricity and water, but they don't have the water and the electricity. This is what's happening in the ground. There is a lot of shortages of construction materials that are not allowed. Israel has announced last June that they will ease the blockade and will allow more materials to come through to the Gaza Strip. Unfortunately, the things that were allowed are not the main things that makes the Gaza economy thrive or recover. It makes things more complicated for the Gaza citizens really to survive. What Israel allowed is something that you find quite funny. I'll mention one or two of the things that they mentioned in bringing into the Gaza Strip by easing the blockade. Among the things is ketchup and mayonnaise. And I met with a young man in Gaza City, and he was extremely happy that Israel has managed to make the siege, to lift the siege or to ease the siege, as Israel said, just to be more specific in the wording here. And when I asked him what's the reason for that, he was very surprised that he got the shoe lease for his shoes, because they were not allowed before and they are allowed now through the Israeli crossings. There are so many materials that are not allowed into the Gaza Strip. That includes steel and that includes cement. And there is a lot of shortages and many other things in the Gaza Strip. A humanitarian crisis are happening at the moment, as all of us are aware of the shortages of medication in the Gaza hospitals. many of the trucks that were allowed into the Gaza Strip just a few hours ago. In the last few days, there has been a number of trucks who were allowed full of medicine. Unfortunately, the Ministry of Health in Gaza City had to throw or dump, they had to dump all the medicine that they got from donor countries into the garbage, because most of the medicine that arrives has expired. It came right after the Gaza war in January 2010, and by the time it arrives today, it has completely expired and it is not usable. It even became very difficult to put it somewhere, because there is not much really scheduled to put these chemicals and medicines into anywhere, but just to throw it in the garbage right in crowded areas in the Gaza Strip.
So you have ketchup, mayonnaise, and shoelaces, but no insufficient water, insufficient medicine. How are people surviving? I mean, what is your family doing for water?
Well, for water, it's around 8 o'clock here. I remember at 2 o'clock, just 6 hours ago, my mother was... it's a rather funny thing. There is a man who comes here and sells water, drinking water, and the man comes with a siren of an ambulance. It's kind of scary. I mean, for any American citizen, if you would come here and then you hear this man coming with an ambulance siren, then you would think, well, this man is coming, there might be an emergency. No, it is the man who is selling water, and we buy the drinking water. Right now, I cannot have a shower at the moment as I speak to you. There is no water for shower. There is drinking water that we bought, and we have to be pretty careful with that water, because we just don't have water. I mean, you just have to live with what we get, and there isn't any much... situation of a luxury. Water is a very basic thing that all nations should have, but in Gaza it's very difficult to get this water, so we are living basically on drinking water that we buy from outside, and washings and having showers is something that can always wait.
Now, what about food? Are you eating enough? Is there enough food for the people in Gaza right now?
There is enough food in the Gaza Strip. The United Nations are still providing food. It's not enough for the families who receive. And according to the United Nations, these families, they have hardships, cases where they don't have or they cannot put food on their tables. In the Gaza Strip, there is a lot of food coming through the tunnels. There is no doubt. This is something that you can see in the shelves in Rafah. You can see a lot of food coming through the tunnels, smuggled through Egypt. You can see a lot of things. You know, I have been doing kind of walking around the city to see what's happening, how people are surviving with the food and the sources of things. And I'm writing a report on that, hopefully soon. One of the things that I found is that there is a lot of things that were coming through Egypt, including milk, cheese, meat, fish, and even fruit that comes through the tunnels. So there is a lot of food, but are people able to afford buying the food? That's the question here, which remains problematic in the case of Gaza, where you have 80% of the Gaza Strip are... living with unemployment in the Gaza Strip. Unemployment is even increasing. There is 70% of the population who are living under poverty line. And even if you have got food, you have got to have cash in order to buy the food. Buying food is impossible. One of the things that I wanted to tell you today, I went to get some cash, which I got from... my work. I got the payment from the United States, and I went to the bank to just get some money. To my surprise, the gentleman who's sitting behind the desk in the bank is telling me, sorry, we can see that you've got some cash in the machine, but we do not have physical cash. So I went with the attempt to get some cash and to get back home. Then he telling me U.S. dollars is not available, and even Israeli shekel and other currencies are not available. We are living in a situation of a crisis under siege, and I know that you have got the payment here. I can see it in the system, but I'm sorry. I can't give it to you because we don't have it.
So there's a physical shortage of actual dollars, in actual bills and coins?
There is a physical shortage of coins, like the $100 bill or 50 or 20 or 10 or even 5 or even 1. They are not available in the Gaza Strip anymore. There is shortages of cash that comes through because Gaza has been living for 4 years under siege. Today, I couldn't get my payment, really. I couldn't get my payment out of the bank. I had to spend 3 hours just running from one corner to another in the bank, and at the end, they're telling me that, sorry, we do not have cash. Come another day. And I say, what am I going to do? He said to me, well, you can just sit in the corner on that chair and wait, and then we call you. And I really, my journalistic career has invited me to be more curious to see, I mean, where the hell are they going to get the solution for me? Explain that to me. Can you explain that one to me? And then I'm sitting quietly, and then there is a gentleman who said to me, well, I'm going to explain to you. Now and then there is some old ladies who own lands and who come to put a few hundred dollars in their bank accounts. So we wait for those ladies when they come here, or men, and once they deposit the money, we give it to you. It's as easy as that. And then I said, so when am I going to wait for this lady or man or whoever to come? And he said, well, inshallah, God willing, this person will come. If not today, tomorrow. If not tomorrow, maybe the day after. If not the day after, let's wait after the weekend. Or maybe it will be difficult that we will have to wait another week. But it will come. It will come. Just keep sitting there.
In what way is this, I mean, is this an intentional strategy to make Palestinian life more difficult, not having cash available even to people who have money in the bank? I mean, what's the reason for it?
Well, Israel, the reason is very simple. The Israeli banks, they have stopped dealing with the Gaza banks for the last 3 years now. Israel has completely instructed the Israeli banks not to transfer physical money into the Gaza Strip. So the money does not come through to the Gaza Strip all the way. So it becomes very complicated in the Gaza Strip if you get cash within from bank to another. That makes the Gaza Strip banks under siege and in a very difficult conditions. And you just can't solve it, basically. I mean, when they don't have cash, they just don't have cash because Israel is not allowing physical cash. To be more accurate, Israel did allow for some time, some of the cash to come through, but this is only restricted to the United Nations employees who receive their salaries through the banks, and this is a limited amount of money for a specific reason, for a specific targeted group, which I call the elites of Gaza.
We're talking to journalist Mohammed Omer. Now, traditionally, Palestinians have had a thriving agricultural tradition, but because of the way land has been taken away from them and also the wall and borders, I guess food production by Palestinians for other Palestinians is much more difficult or impossible.
It is it's nearly impossible in the Gaza Strip to have any food production for many reasons. One of the reasons, if we start, for example, to take agriculture, there is no raw materials. Plastic and fertilizers for agriculture products and materials like raw materials, they are not allowed into the Gaza Strip for a long time. Israel has opened a little bit in June, allowing some of you the things, but not everything. And still things are quite expensive to afford. One of the things I wanted to tell you here is to make falafel Falafel used to be one of the cheapest things that poor people can afford to eat because it's very cheap. Now it's becoming quite expensive, to my surprise. I went yesterday to the market to ask a man who's making falafel in Rafa in the southern part of the Gaza Strip, close to the border, and I asked him, "Sir, what's happening with this? Why falafel is getting expensive?" Then he went on to tell me with the ingredients of the falafel that the kilo of this material became, instead of 7, 15 shekels. This became, instead of 8, 16 shekels. Everything is double or even more, which makes things very difficult for the business owners to start a business or to work, or basically to for the economy to thrive, because they just can't afford it. And at the end, it became all products become very expensive and unaffordable to the Palestinians. One of the things that came through Egypt, smuggled through the tunnels, are very expensive. Things that came through Israel are a little bit cheaper than the ones, perhaps better in the quality than the Egyptian product, but it doesn't really cover the need because the amount is not sufficient in the market, still, it is unaffordable when you have 80% of the Gaza Strip are unemployed, and the majority of the Gaza Strip are living on aid provided by the United Nations. So providing self-sufficient product or providing products to the Gaza Strip is something which is nearly impossible in the Gaza Strip, given the circumstances. If the situation to be allowed, like borders to be open and Palestinians to be able to get in and out, and products to get in and out, then this is possible. One of the things that I really wanted people at Santa Fe to hear and in New Mexico is something which, to my understanding, I really gather from how lovely the people of Santa Fe and Albuquerque were and how hospitable they were. And I wanted my friends there to listen to the story of a man who owns the biggest business of carnation flowers in the Gaza Strip. His carnation flowers are growing just 10 minutes away from where I am at the moment. And for the fourth year, the man grow his carnation flowers, and the carnation flowers, millions of flowers, are supposed to be transported from the Gaza Strip and exported through Israel, through Israeli company called Arixo, straight into Amsterdam in the Netherlands for the flower market. For the fourth year, the farmers of the carnation flowers are no longer able to afford to transport, because Israel is not allowing transportation of Palestinian-made flower or strawberries outside of the Gaza Strip. And the gentleman who owns this business had gone bankrupt. A man who used to be one of the most wealthy businessmen in the area is nowadays running on the road trying to collect food from here and there for his family and the children. In fact, he's no longer living in his house because the labor and all those people who are service suppliers and raw material suppliers are coming asking for their debts. They want their money back from this man, and he's no longer able to afford it. And he lost in the last business $2 million, and he lost before that $1.5 million, and he's losing even more and more, and he cannot afford anything. Now there is a threat from the workers that they are going to sell his cows, to sell his house and his machines in order to get their payments. This is one example of a man who's supposed to be well off in the Gaza Strip, but due to the siege, his products are no longer allowed to be exported. And Israel is not allowing the carnation flowers to be in the hands of lovers in Europe. And instead, the carnation flowers are taken not straight to Europe, but straight to the mouths of sheep and camels in the Gaza Strip. And When I asked him how does he feel about this, the man said in a very sad tone, "There is nothing worth it in this life when you lose everything. What I am happy about is that my family and my children are all healthy, and this is what counts." When I asked him how is he going to fix the problem with the workers that he's not able to pay money, he said to me, "There is no solution, but I'm raising my hand to God to ask for help, because God will be the only to listen to my and to my story." I told him that there is a lot of people who do care outside and they want to hear these stories. He said it's the fourth year. Each year he managed to fix some of the damages and to plant carnation flowers to make them ready, and instead they wait for many days at the Israeli crossings, and at the end they return rotten, and he had to offer the carnation flowers for his animals, the cows, the sheep, in his neighborhood.
We're talking to journalist Mohammed Omer. Under these circumstances of economic deprivation and water, and you've had a heat wave, so it's been very hot, and there's been no electricity, and the medicines are unavailable, and then they come and they're expired. I imagine that people are getting sick and dying at a higher rate than normal. Do you see a lot of illness and death and traffic in the hospitals?
I have been away for 1 year and a half for medical treatment outside of the Gaza Strip. And coming back, I have noticed how devastating the humanitarian situations are in the Gaza Strip. One of the things that I found quite shocking is to see the number of people who are having problems with their teeth. It's increasing in the Gaza Strip, and that's because of the malnutrition and because of the water, the drinking water. So you find, this is one of the things that I saw in the first hours when I get to the Gaza Strip, and I noticed from all those people who are coming to visit me that this is something common. There are many people who are having diseases, and there are many things where you have a crisis and things are very complicated. And many hospitals are simply not able to fix all the problems, and therefore they had to transfer the cases to Egypt. This is yet another a crisis. You are not allowed to get out of the Gaza Strip whenever you want. You have to have a very, very, very special reason to get outside of the Gaza Strip. Medical treatment, it depends what type of medical treatment. If you are a near-death experience, then, well, maybe you will be able to get out. But if not, then you will just never get outside of the Gaza Strip. There are many cases, hundreds of cases, who wanted to get outside of the Gaza Strip to receive medical treatment. They cannot. I know some Palestinian Authority officials in the Ministry of Health who had to be tipped, basically. It's cases of corruption. They need to be paid in order to have their signature on waivers to give Palestinian patients the possibility to get out to receive medical treatment. Unfortunately, there is a lot of corruption within the Palestinians themselves, within the Palestinian Authority. Palestinian Authority were never able to address all these cases of corruption. A man who told me the other day that he had to pay 1,000 shekels in order to get a record from a doctor that he needs medical treatment in Egypt. And he couldn't get it before he had to pay the money, basically. This is something that is very, very serious. Even getting outside into Israeli hospitals or Palestinian hospitals from the Gaza Strip to the West Bank is impossible in the Gaza Strip. Many of the cases, and I'm quoting here or referring to the report of Geisha and Physicians for Human Rights in Israel, Israeli human rights group, who said that there has been cases where Israel blackmailed the Palestinian patients and they asked them to work with the Israeli intelligence and to inform about Hamas and about the other political parties in order to get exit permit to receive medical treatment outside of the Gaza Strip. So on both sides, Palestinians are suffering. There is a new tragedy in the Gaza Strip that the United Nations, UNRWA, they might end up shutting down some of their schools, some of their clinics, some of their institutions, because they have no enough budget to run the institutions in the Gaza Strip. The United Nations, they have declared that in a brief statement the day before yesterday, and there is a growing concern in the Gaza Strip that if the United Nations had to stop providing education, health, and other necessary and job creation for those who cannot afford, then the whole thing will collapse, basically.
This is the holy month of Ramadan. How are conditions in Gaza affecting the way Ramadan is being practiced?
Well, religiously speaking, there is a lot of growing religious waves in the Gaza Strip. People are getting to be more religious in the Gaza Strip. Still, people are not able to provide the things that they need. There is a sense of solidarity that I should really admit among all the difficult conditions in the Gaza Strip, that you never see somebody who is dying from hunger. Still, people who are, there is no one who is starving. There are people in the neighborhood who are sharing everything they have, even a little bit of water, to drink water, they share it. A little bit of food, a little bit of rice, a little bit of bread, they share it. A little bit of tomato. You see that if you, once you get in deep, deeper into the families and you start to get into them, you see how they are living. You get into their kitchen, you see in their refrigerator, and you ask them how they manage. You know, there is a lot of solidarity, and this is increasing indeed in the Ramadan month, that people are having a common solidarity, and there is a lot of understanding in the community, and Palestinians in the refugee camp are very close to each other. In Ramadan month, this is the way how it should be. But to my surprise, even before Ramadan starts, this was the situation, and I believe this is what keeps the Gaza Strip surviving under the difficult conditions of the four-year-old siege.
The last time you were on the program, last April, you told a story about going to a barbershop to get a shave and how there was so much anger about the circumstances in Gaza that people were getting radicalized and they were trying to prevent young men from shaving. What's the barbershop like now?
I am going really to have my hair cut in about half an hour. So I would rather answer this question when I'm there. It will take me 10 minutes to get there. I presume that the barbershop, they don't have electricity at the moment like here, but he might have electricity generator. So if you call me by then, I'm more than willing to answer all the questions that you have on that.
So we will meet you in the barbershop in a little while, but to the larger question, there was this very scary issue, and even, you know, you were telling us how you were shocked at the extent to which anger and a kind of radicalization was expressing itself even among formerly liberal people.
Unfortunately, this is what is growing in the Gaza Strip. There is a lot of conservative trends in the Gaza Strip that are growing. There is self-censorship. The society is no longer open. You talk to young men, they cannot see anything, but they can see the devastating situation of siege, shortages of water, shortages of electricity, of medicine, and all the difficult conditions, and they are just closing on themselves. They are just closing, they are shutting down on everything, and they are oppressing themselves. There is limited freedom in the Gaza Strip. Yet, I should admit that there is a lot of security. Regardless of what I think of Hamas as an individual and as a journalist, I should admit that there is a lot of security in comparison to before 2007 when Hamas took control of the Gaza Strip. There has been never any kind of security. Before, any member of the security establishment would walk into a restaurant, sit in the restaurant, order the best meal in the menu, and with his family, with his wife and the friends, and then eat it and just take his car and then leave. He cannot pay. Then he say, well, I don't pay, and that's it. The owner of the restaurant cannot say anything to him because he has a gun. Nowadays, this is something that you don't see anymore. This is something that became like prohibited under the Hamas system, that there is more justice. yes, Hamas does indeed limit freedoms in many ways. There's a lot of rights that were violated, including the right to protest. A few days ago, there was a protest against the shortages of electricity. They were attacked by the police of the government in the Gaza Strip. There is no explanation for that, but this is what's happening. And freedom of expression, both in the West Bank and the Gaza Strip, are also restricted. Newspapers are not allowed to be distributed in some parts of the Gaza Strip and the West Bank because of opposite parties, Hamas and Fatah. And all these devastating situations are causing a lot of concern among the Palestinians within the Gaza Strip and the West Bank. It's from both sides, unfortunately. The normal Gazans who are living in the Gaza Strip, they have only one hope, and that we hope this will become part of history and nothing more.
How are you getting your information? Well, you're a journalist and you travel, but how are ordinary people in Gaza getting their information?
In Gaza, you don't need to get information, really. Local news, you don't need to get local news, because local news, look at your neighborhood. What's happening in your neighborhood, in your street, is happening in everywhere of the Gaza Strip. The siege has made everybody equal in a way. So you don't get much of the news, really. I mean, once if you get electricity, you can listen to radio, you can listen what's happening. But, you know, the whole thing is just very difficult, you know, when people are having very difficult situations, they just, you know, they don't listen to the news. I mean, because many, they don't have electricity. And I talk to some Palestinians, and when you tell them, hey, how come that you get your news? Can you tell me how you get your news? And then they say, well, there is no point of the news. There is no point of listening to the news because the news is repeating itself over and over and over again. What's happening today will keep happening for the next 10 months, and it's not going to change. The whole situation will even get worse, and it's all devastating situation for all the Gaza Strip, basically, where everybody is not really keen to get to know the news, because the news is me, you, him, her, all the neighborhood are the news. This is what's happening. Shortages of water, shortages of electricity, shortages of everything, and then you become... This is what makes you even, or makes many Gazans feel that they are not part of the world, where, you know, they... I met with a group of young people that I wanted to see the World Cup, for example. How did they manage to watch the World Cup? It was very, very unique situation, where everybody, all the neighborhood, the children, they had to collect money in order to go and... buy some fuel and buy a big screen, or actually rent a big screen. They did rent a big screen from one of the neighborhoods here, and in order to get to watch the World Football Cup in Rafah. And that's how the situation would really go on in this. For journalists, it should be much easier. The communication is very, very bad at the moment. Mobile, and I think you know much better than me, Mary Charlotte, because you did try eventually to reach me several times on my cell phone, and you couldn't get hold of me. I'm aware of that. And, you know, the mobile telecommunication is most of the time down because there is no enough electricity to operate the antennas. But... that is Gaza, and no one knows when it's going to be over, but there is a lot of people who are hoping that this will end soon. Still, those who were hopeful in 2008 and 2009 are still hopeful in 2010, and they hope for a better future where the siege will end and they can have their freedom, and they can have their basic rights, including the right to have electricity and water.
We're talking to journalist Mohammed Omer. One of the things we talked about the last time that you were here in Santa Fe was what kind of a job the media are doing in different countries. Where do you feel that the situation in Gaza on the ground, the things that you're telling me, where are they getting proper coverage?
Unfortunately, you know, one of the things that I found when I came to Gaza, that there is a lot of difference in the media. The United States media is getting nowhere in covering the Gaza Strip. I do respect democracy now for its coverage from the Gaza Strip, but there isn't much reports on daily basis to cover what's happening in depth. And but still, Democracy Now! Amy Goodman is one of the best shows, which I find quite amazing, really, to refer to. And while the other news sites or channels or news agencies or websites or newspapers even, they don't really cover much of the Gaza Strip. Some of the media that did exaggerate in the depth of the humanitarian crisis. Others, they overestimate, and some others, they underestimate what's happening. Other media, like in the U.S., they tend to simplify the situation in the Gaza Strip, especially the humanitarian situation. And where there is an explanation for that, you know, there is a lot of restrictions from Israel for the journalists to be allowed into the Gaza Strip. There are many journalists who are not allowed to get inside the Gaza Strip to report. You have to have be working for one of the big newspapers or magazines in order to be able to get access to the Gaza Strip to give coverage from the Gaza Strip. In general, there isn't much really in-depth media attention on what's happening in the Gaza Strip, and I don't know how this is going to change, but this is the reality for the time being.
One of the things that I think is very difficult is that a lot of Israelis don't know what's going on in the Gaza Strip.
That's the same situation that goes with them, like the Americans. You don't really blame the Israeli citizens, you do blame the media, because there is a lot of censorship in the media. Media are not allowing, let me put it that way. Even the Israeli journalists, they are not allowed into the Gaza Strip. So that's the main reason, really. I'm sure there are many media in Israel. They would want to have coverage from the Gaza Strip if they are exposed to the situation in the Gaza Strip. If you bring a reporter into the Gaza Strip and make him in a situation with no running water for 3 days, with no shower, and you would tell him that you've got to be careful with the drinking water, you don't waste water, and you tell him that there is no electricity for 16 hours where he is not able to file stories or to keep in contact or to go on Twitter or on Facebook, then it becomes difficult for him. Then they will be able to understand the situation. But if they are not exposed to the situation, then understanding what's happening will be nearly impossible, because it's not possible for them to imagine the depths of the crisis in the Gaza Strip.
Mohammed, what is your hope for change for this situation? How do you see a way forward if you do?
I think international law is the best way to start with. The United Nations resolution are there in Geneva. They are there in New York. Many of them are documents that are collecting dust in both Geneva and New York. Basically, the solution lies in the United Nations, and with respect for human rights, with open borders for the Palestinians, and with a stop of violence from all sides. Basically, that's the whole solution. Once you give rights back, then everything will become back to normal, I do expect.
We've been talking with award-winning journalist Mohammed Omer. We're going to take a little break right now, and we're going to come back in a moment where we will meet him at his local barbershop. And we're back with Mohammed Omer, who is talking to us on a cell phone from his neighborhood barbershop in Gaza.
running his shop on electricity generator. The electricity generator is smuggled through Egypt. The tunnels between it is the electricity generator is smuggled through the tunnels that comes from Egypt, and the fuel that runs right now is coming also through the tunnels. So I am here. There is no electricity for the last how many hours? For 8 hours, there has been electricity. This is Alaa, who is the barbershop owner, a gentleman who's telling me one of the most devastating things he said to me just now, that the gentleman before me, he had 50 shekels, and Alaa could not have any cash. There is no currency to give him the change because the market has no money. And I'm telling him, what do you do in this situation? He said, well, then I have someone who is specialized for this, a young man who will have to go in all the neighbors' shops, in the shoe shops, in the sweet shop, in the mobile telephone shop, in the other mobiles, in the mechanics, in the shoes, all the places looking for a change just to get some few shekels in order to pay for him from a man who was just here about 10 minutes ago. Another man who was here before that, he said, well, I don't have money, but I look quite awful, so I need to have my hair cut. Would you mind if you wait for me until a month or two? I was interested to hear how this young man is surviving, and he's still sitting here right next to me at the moment, and he said to me that he works for the United Nations UNRWA in the Gaza Strip, and he hasn't received his salary. He said that he has a lot of family members who are having difficult life, and since he hasn't received his salary due to the fact that the United Nations program, they are having budget problems, and it is a big deal for them to get in and out of materials into the Gaza Strip or even cash. There is a problem that the donors are not able to fix all the troubles in the Gaza Strip because there is a lot of need to the Gaza Strip, but the donor community so far has not been able to provide everything that the Gaza Strip needs.
So how many people are there right now in the barbershop?
In the barbershop, there is about 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 people. Normally there is more because he has electricity that comes through the generator. So most of the people prefer to come to sit in the barbershop where they can have some light. And at the moment, they are everybody is gathering. There are more people who will be coming soon to watch a Syrian soap opera, which is called Gate of the Neighborhood. It shows the life of the Syrian people under the French occupation. Most of them are not here to really have their hair cut. They're just coming just for the sake of some light, and they are coming for to have some a few things. If I go just outside at the moment and I try to get something, you can even have a phone conversation inside this place. For example, getting outside, I cannot have a talk with anybody. Well, you can hear right now, while I'm talking to you, the generator of electricity. You can't have any place outside. You just have to be inside, and they have to keep it far away in order to have a normal talk. This is a normal street. The next shop that sells falafel, the other one is another barber shop. The other one is a man who's supposed to provide cash. The other one is shoe shop. Another one is for some kind of a small shop for vegetables. And all these shops are having, they don't have really all the generators to run this. Even the man who has ice cream shop, he's not able to run his business because he simply cannot keep running the generator as it requires a lot of fuel from Egypt. I can hardly hear you, Mary Charlotte, at the moment, actually.
Yeah.
It's inside the barbershop, hopefully to be away from the electricity generators. But electricity generators, nobody can have any talk in the streets because this is almost every night in the Gaza Strip here.
It seems like a trivial thing, but basically the person who has the ice cream shop has a lot of melted ice cream.
Well, most of it, let me ask the gentleman here, and I can ask them how is it. كيف تاع برا الدعم بتاع الاسهم ولما يكون عند اسهم بتسيح الاسهم تخرب ولا شو؟
قول لي وين المجلدات
في المجلدات تخرب؟ وين المجلدات؟ وبارح شاف رمضان 20 كيلو لحم. He said one of the people that I have here next to us, he has a shop where he sells frozen meat. He throw away more than 20 kilo of meat because it was rotten as there is no electricity generators working. The generators, the refrigerators are not working. The lights are completely destroyed. As a result of that, there is it damaged everything. The electricity shortages, sometimes it comes too strong, sometimes it comes too weak, that doesn't operate the whole house. There are many people who died. This is a man who's in the barbershop. He said three of my friends died in the electricity generators because they could not operate them well, and they eventually died. Another one, he said, in a wedding the other day, he died in an explosion in one of the electricity generators, which exploded because there is no maintenance for them here in the Gaza Strip. Everybody here is mentioning a lot of stories. When I'm talking about death stories, everybody is contributing here in this room. People are having a lot of troubles. He said, some shortages of everything. As he said, it's a very difficult life. That's what he said. The wave heat, shortages of water is very important. He's telling me, please tell her. He's urging me. Tell her and tell the Americans we do not have running water. Tell them that we do not have running water and we have shortages of electricity all the time, and it's a very difficult thing.
Mohammed Omer, it's just about time for us to go. Anything else that you want to tell our listeners? Anything else that your friends right now in the barbershop want to tell to Santa Fe?
للراديو الأمريكي هناك في مدينة سانتا في نيو مكسيكو. We want an immediate solution for shortages of water, shortages of electricity. The owner of the shop is saying what we are looking for is life with dignity, like the rest of the world. There is a lot of psychological problems that are growing among the children after the war. People are feeling quite tired and tense, stressed as a result of the shortages of everything. There should be some place where Palestinian children they could go outside in a safe playgrounds where they can play in a safe away from bombs and shelling and all that. My store, I'm trying to build a small room. Every day I'm trying to wait for the construction materials. They are not allowed to come through the Israeli crossings. We don't know when is it going to finish. I have lost my house. The ownership of this shop is saying, and he said, I cannot find anywhere to go to seek shelter. I am paying for a small apartment that I'm renting, and it's getting to be very expensive and unaffordable, even when I have a job as a barbershop owner. What am I going to do when there is no electricity? I turn on the generator, but I'm thinking about it sometimes, and then I think, well, hey, it is a big deal here. There is the money that I'm getting, the revenue from the business is not covering the fuel. So in a few days, I will just have to stop. It's becoming a matter of entertainment for me to gather friends around me and to give them some light and some place with a fan to sit with everybody.
If people want to help, is there a website? Are there organizations that they should know about?
United Nations is the best place to start with, really. The United Nations and UNRWA might be the best option. I would always really recommend to help get the message outside of the Gaza Strip. This is something that I would always really want people to understand in terms of help, really to get the message out. The United Nations can help to put food and medical supplies to the people.
Mohammed Omer, thank you so much for being with us here on the Santa Fe Radio Cafe.
Thank you.
We've been talking to Mohammed Omer, award-winning journalist. He is the recipient of the Martha Gellhorn Prize from his dispatches in Gaza, and his work has appeared in many international media outlets. And this program was recorded in the afternoon, Santa Fe time, when it was between 8 and 10 in the evening in Gaza. And we put it all together so that you, our listeners, could hear the whole thing at once. You've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're streaming live on the web at ksfr.org, podcasting at santafe.radiocafe.org, thanks to Dotfoil Computer Services. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes. We're at facebook.com/radiocafe, and my email address is radiocafe@ksfr.org. Thanks so much to Mary Lynn LeBlanc and Sean Conlon for engineering today. Stay tuned for the BBC, followed by local news by KSFR's award-winning news team, and after that, jazz.